Hi, and welcome to the Should Be Known podcast. All right, I'm Clayton Pixton. This is episode number 27. Welcome here. Well, it's been a couple few weeks that I've recorded, and things are interesting in life, of course. And what can we say? We're in the middle of COVID still, and who knows how long we will be. And this will all be history one day, but we got to keep plugging on in the ways we can, right? So we're plugging on, trying to understand self-deception as it relates to everything, but specifically, we're kind of looking at anxiety and depression. Just because to me those seem really relevant to so many people. Just about everybody has to deal with it either personally or somebody they know. I'd be surprised if you don't know somebody who struggles with that, at least. That little piano thing is just nothing, just something I came up with the other day. You want to hear it on guitar? For some reason I didn't realize I was, but I'm kind of playing the same thing on the guitar. And it sounds kind of like this. Like that. And I've been trying to record a lot of my old songs and hopefully some of my new ones too. And I would like to get those out and just get them published. I feel like they're all just kind of sitting on my website, claytonpixton.com, but not really a place that most people would ever go. And a lot of the recordings aren't the greatest either. So I'm trying to work on that, trying to fix that. I have multiple projects I want to record, and it's just a little overwhelming sometimes, but I gotta start working on it, I guess. All right, I think we're ready to jump into the notes. Here we go. Episode 27. The thing with the learned behaviors. In the last podcast, we talked a little bit about learned behaviors, a la Alice Miller, and how pressure from parents, kind of emotional pressure, can cause a person to kind of learn to cope with things in certain ways and deal with things in life a certain way and kind of learn stuff. And I said that I wanted to understand that better and see maybe a better explanation of that. I think Alice Miller did a really good job with what she did. I don't know how kind of comprehensive it is or how kind of plainly maybe it's laid out. She's very lucid in the way she writes, I think, but doesn't necessarily lay it out in a logical kind of manner. And I wonder if that would be beneficial. But it seems like the learned behaviors from the parents or caregivers can be explained in terms of self-deception. And that's where we come in, right? We're all about self-deception. That's the big insight. How does self-deception explain it? Self-deception can help explain these learned behaviors because, yeah, you learn to behave in these ways, but it's the ways that we're talking about are distortions of reality, right? They're not just good ways and bad ways. They are, but the bad ways are always distortions of reality, and it's all ways because of self-deception. Next thought. This is on Saturday, August 1st, 2020. If there's always an element of victimhood and an element of personal responsibility, then you can't always just snap out of something, right? Sometimes you can and sometimes you can't. If you can, I guess that's where it's mostly personal responsibility that's the issue, and you're not so far in the trap that you can't snap out of it. But other times the reverse is true, where somebody is caught in a trap, in a snare, and you might not be able to snap out of it. Miracles happen. I acknowledge that. And sometimes you can snap out of something very deep and difficult. And I'm not sure how to explain that. But I would say there's a good portion of the time where you just can't, and you can't be expected to. Nobody can expect you to snap out of something. It will take time and choices along the way, and possibly a miracle in that case as well. I often think of the 12-step programs for like Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and whatever else Anonymous, and how there seems to always be an element of that that acknowledges God and one's dependence on Him. And it's not specific about doctrine or whatever, but it does have that. And that seems interesting to me. And it seems like maybe that's always necessary. I'm not sure what people do who just don't believe in God or have a hard time believing in God or something like that. I'm not sure how they handle that. But anyway, that's another matter. But the point is, sometimes you can snap out of something and sometimes you can't. One thing that I feel like I need to do a little more of or a little better with is having examples on hand and having a clear way to explain to people, and maybe in my own mind, of examples of self-deception and how it happens all through life. To me, it's kind of apparent, but it's, I guess, the way I think of most of it is kind of religious self-deception, which was a topic of the second episode. That seems most clear to me, and I see that in life a lot. I'm a religious person, and I know many people see people around me and see what happens when people choose not to believe or choose to discount stuff religiously, kind of as a way of justifying disobedience, and is kind of the way I see it. But it really pervades all of life. So I'd like to have some more examples of self-deception that I can draw on. Here are a couple ideas: religious self-justification and self-deception, where a person downplays God and His word and His messengers as a justification for disobedience. And then there's what Terry Warner talked about, which is I'd call interpersonal self-deception, where a person downplays the reality of other people in order to justify their treating them bad. And again, the justification and the thing it justifies are kind of the same thing, it seems like. And I still need to finish exploring that thought. And then there's stuff that's kind of non-religious and it's not interpersonal either. Like, for example, littering. The Bible doesn't say not to litter. And it's possible a person might never have been taught not to litter. But in my mind, surely everybody knows that you shouldn't litter, that it's just not good. And I have to think that the light of Christ would teach a person not to do that. I think, at least. It's not written anywhere, but I would think just a person's guiding principles of right and wrong, which is the light of Christ. And that's episode 4, is what tells a person not to do that. So if you do it, you have to kind of justify yourself in doing it and paint the world in a different way. So let's look at a different example: stealing. It's a commandment of God and it's in the Bible. But say you don't know the Bible, and say nobody has ever taught you not to steal. I don't know if that's a very realistic situation or not, but you still know it's wrong. How? The light of Christ. Everybody knows it's wrong. Nobody has to teach it to you. It's easier if they do, because otherwise you're ignorant, quote unquote, but ignorantly sinning is still sinning because it's wrong. And if it's wrong, you'll know that through the light of Christ, if no other way, right? It may be faint, you're knowing it, but you know right from wrong, whether anybody has taught you or not, because everybody who has the mental capacity of an 8-year-old or whatever knows right from wrong. That's how I see it. So that's how I'm seeing some different examples of self-deception. It's hard to nail down ones like littering, that there's nothing I know that's written against it. It's bad practice, but it's also, and maybe there are cases that justify it and it's okay and the light of Christ wouldn't tell you not to do it. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. But I see the light of Christ as a dynamic thing that governs differently in every situation, or can. Sometimes the right thing is not to kill, and sometimes the right thing is to kill. And sometimes you refrain from doing something on the Sabbath, and sometimes you do something on the Sabbath that you wouldn't otherwise do, but it's actually the right thing to do in that case. You can try to make rules about it, and they might be helpful, but in the end, you don't know. The wisdom of man can't necessarily know what's right and wrong in a given situation. We're just too limited, too many factors or whatever, and even if it was just a matter of different factors that we could know, there might be some other reason, I guess, some other factor that we don't know of that we can't judge. We don't know everything. We're not God. That's why we have to have the Spirit of God to know. And that's the light of Christ. That's the Spirit of Christ. Why it's called that, I'm not sure. In the Book of Mormon by the prophet Mormon. Okay. Next thought. Saturday, August 8th, 2020. Reading about these guys who made discoveries and steps forward or whatever in science. I was reading in the book A Short History of Almost Everything, of Nearly Everything, by Bill Bryson. It's interesting to me because it's about science and the theories of science and discoveries of science. But wouldn't it be nice for me if I could be more scientific about things with self-deception? Divorce myself a little from the dependence on religious belief. I should mention that, and that will be part of it, but I want to make it so it's clearly understood that that part of it can be considered, scientifically speaking, as a postulation. What if I offered the thing with self-deception as an observation and made the case more strongly, very clearly, so that everybody can see it plainly? And I believe that can be done. And I'd like to practice having that more on the tip of my tongue. And then once that's established, you go to the next step of why it happens. And be clear, like I said, that that part is made up by me. It's a theory. It's a postulation, scientifically speaking. It might be right. It might be exactly right. But science isn't going to know that. It's going to be a postulation that way. It's something that science is never going to observe the light of Christ directly. You can't see it in a microscope, in a telescope, in any other way. All you can see is the evidence for it. But you can still be clear that that's what there is, that that's the postulation. The next part, I guess, is that for some reason, anytime we go against our higher knowledge of right and wrong, we have to justify it. The fact that there is that higher knowledge is a postulation. And the fact that self-deception is actually a justification for doing that is also a postulation. I guess they're two separate things. Or maybe the next part is that there's a universal knowledge of right and wrong that we have. That's the first postulation, not a static one, but one that rules every situation we're in. Not reason, as some philosophers have wondered, mere logic based on what must be best for the common good. That's what a lot of philosophers have kind of reasoned. I don't know how many. Seemed like when I was studying philosophy that that was the case, but not a common good practicality thing, not good based on that, but a living continuing thing, not based on man's knowledge at all, but God's. Man may have a part of the knowledge of God, but he will never have all of it, and therefore will never be able to judge aright of himself in every situation. God has all knowledge and knows what's right in every situation. And if we're to judge rightly, or have any hope of judging rightly, we're going to need, aren't we, access to that knowledge. And it's probably better that it's not direct knowledge, or else what kind of a test is this life? Surely it has to be a little bit faint. Surely it has to be a thing of faith. If we knew exactly, clearly, and without a doubt what was right and wrong, then we'd, what would we do? We'd be condemned more, right? If we chose against the light. It seems like God is merciful in the way that he allows us to self-deceive, basically, and allows us to be a little bit in the dark all the time. So when we make wrong choices, nobody can claim that we knew full well what we were doing. Sometimes maybe you do, and we're not going to talk about that here, except to say that that more fully condemns the sinner, right? But when you're trying your best, you're still going to make mistakes. So what we have is this instinct, if you will, this kind of faint knowledge of good and evil. I say faint, but I don't know if I want to say that, because let me at least say this. The place I get this term, light of Christ or spirit of Christ, both terms are synonymous, and they're both used by the same person, Mormon, in the Book of Mormon, to talk about the light of Christ and the spirit of Christ. He says the way to judge good and evil is plain as the day is from the dark night. As plain as day and night, we can know good and evil. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm not there. So I'm assuming that, practically speaking, for a lot of us at least, it is faint. And maybe we can get to the point where it's not, or maybe I'm just a very unconfident person and incompetent. But I feel like in a way it is faint, because it's not given to us through the senses, for one thing, the physical senses, only spiritual, which you can know something, of course, spiritually. You can know it full well. You can know something without a doubt through spiritual means. But how do you get that across? I'm not sure. And it seems, oh boy, I always work myself into these places where I'm unsure about something or have questions about something. It's hard to talk about this stuff. But in any case, seems like you start with that insight of self-deception, and then you, I guess, move directly on from there to the postulation part where, yeah, it looks like we obviously self-deceive or think these things that are out of alignment with what seems to be reality, and it looks like, or an explanation for it would be that there is this knowledge we have that we're going against. That's exactly what it looks like. And that's the only real, that's the best explanation that we have. Science says that if we have two explanations and one of them is the more elegant and the simpler, we're supposed to choose that simpler one, the one that's more elegant. For example, Einstein's theory of gravity is the simplest. It's the most elegant. It explains things the best. So we're supposed to choose that. And I feel like not everybody has, really, because it's kind of hard to wrap one's mind around, I guess. That's the reason. But it is the best one. Gravitons, there's no exchange of particles. In his theory, there's no exchange of particles between, you know, objects that are exerting gravity upon each other. There's no strings, invisible strings there. There's nothing. It's just an actual bending of space-time that is caused by any mass. And those objects bend space-time of everything else, and that's just what they're in. They're floating. They're free-falling in space-time. There's no pulling on anything, if that makes sense. So that's the most elegant explanation. And I say that self-deception is the most elegant explanation for, well, okay, no, let me say it differently. And I say that a universal knowledge of good and evil by everybody and our justification of that is the best explanation for self-deception. Let me put it that way. Self-deception happens. We can see that. We can observe that. It's so much a part of our everyday life that it's hard to isolate. It's like oxygen or the air we breathe. It's just all around us. We're not used to being in its absence. But it's possible to isolate it, and you can see it that way. So the same way with self-deception, you can see an absence of it, and you can see the presence of it. So you can kind of isolate it if you try hard. There's a truth that we have access to, that we all have access to, constantly. And when we go against it, we feel it. We can't escape it. It necessitates our justifying of it. What else can I say? And then you just give example after example after example. So maybe that's what I need to work on. Terry Warner had lots of examples. I feel like all the examples I think of more easily are the religious ones, but there's way more than that. But it all does pertain to moral stuff, and it seems like it's hard to talk to the world about moral stuff. But I guess you just say it as best you can and make your audience as wide as you can without diluting it too much and weakening your own position too much, and do your best and see where it goes. And you can talk to different audiences at different times, I guess. Terry Warner obviously was trying to talk to a non-religious audience. I feel like he only says in the epilogue how he believes that stuff ultimately comes from God, the thing we go against. And it's hard to know what he really thought about that just from that. Yeah, anyway, I think there's a strong case. It's just a matter of buckling down, going to the work to make it. All right, guys, this has been fun, right? Hope you agree, and it's good to be with you. Should Be Known podcast. I'm Clayton Pixton. This is episode 27, and I hope you have a great day. Bye.